You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
It's the first time that Apple have actually decided to tell people about something that they're developing.
High-speed broadband. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
The three main spamming countries are the United States, China, and South Korea.
And I've got some residual powers.
Sounds like something out of Harry Potter.
Senator Coonan, the voice of reason.
There's a couple of systems on a gantry that's actually based on a military missile tracking system.
You put the date on ePray, and you get a whole service just on it.
How does it go?
IE7, you were having trouble installing it because you had a genuine copy of Windows that wouldn't validate properly. What did you have to do to get past that?
Built a new machine.
But how hard can it be?
No, it's not hard at all.
At the end of the day, the photography is all about the person's eye and what they see.
If you find something that's inappropriate about your child, you need to do something about it because it will not go away.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm your host, Andrew McComb. This week, it's Telstra's Now You See It, Now You Don't, Now You See It Again iPhone. There's still a few days to July 11, the day Apple's penultimate portable gadget hits the streets here in Oz. So who knows what's left in store? Also today, what do you think would happen if you grabbed a megaphone and walked into a National Australia Bank and bellowed to the world that you had some free tickets to the footy game and you wanted to give them away? Chances are you'd be escorted from the building in a matter of moments and told not to do it again, maybe even charged with many possible offences, including trespass, right? Well, this week, the shoe is on the other foot. Some bright spark in the National Australia Bank's PR department decided to gatecrash social networking sites, uninvited of course, and spruik their free football tickets to those chats they could muscle their way in on. Well, there has been plenty of fallout over this, and the NAB's popularity and reputation was the first casualty. Not only was the NAB's actions felt here, but the tsunami waves rolled across the planet to the United States and beyond, as Lydia Davis, our US correspondent, will report later on today's show.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Firefox 3 may break records and the first vulnerability surfaces. Microsoft re-releases security fixes. Apple's open for business in Sydney. Safari gets a tune-up too. And developers shun Microsoft Vista. First up, though, here's the latest happenings from the Tech Talk News Desk with Graham Callaghan.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, confusion over Telstra's iPhone plans. Australia's first Apple store opens in Sydney. Mozilla smashes its target of 1 million Firefox downloads. Rumours abound of a new 60GB Microsoft Xbox. And Melbourne University's fourth most powerful supercomputer in the world. Welcome to Tech Talk News. In a confusing week for Telstra, the on-again, off-again relationship with Apple's must-have 3G iPhone is apparently on again. Insiders are reckoning the 22nd of July will be a likely date for Telstra to commence selling Apple's new 3G iPhone. The love-hate relationship between Telstra and Apple first came to public attention in February last year. Telstra's operations chief, Mr. Greg Wynne, unleashed a blistering attack on Apple, calling its iPhone old hat. Speaking to AAP at the time, Mr. Wynne's now infamous stick-to-your-knitting remarks alienated Apple and its loyal followers and seemed to dash any hope of a business relationship in the future. When the 3G iPhone was announced last week, Optus and Vodafone were quick to promote themselves as Apple partners and flagged their intention to sell the new high-speed device. Telstra was notably silent and refused to comment on whether it would or wouldn't be selling the new iPhone. On Monday last week, ZDNet reported that the national carrier was remaining silent over speculation that Telstra had derailed a deal with Apple to resell the device and that negotiations had failed over disagreements on whether the device would come preloaded with census content. But on Thursday, an article published by Australian IT indicated that Telstra would be selling Apple's new iPhone, albeit 2 weeks behind rivals Optus and Vodafone. While Telstra is maintaining its corporate no-comment policy, insiders say that the telco will now go ahead and sell the device. In other Apple news, the long-awaited Apple store opened in Sydney last week at 5 p.m. on Thursday afternoon. The $15 million George Street complex features 700 square metres of glass enclosing its atrium. It's the 215th Apple store to be launched worldwide and the second largest in the world after London's Apple store in Regent Street. While the ground floor is devoted to the company's core Macintosh computer line, the first floor features mobile devices including 60 different iPods. Hundreds of Apple enthusiasts lined the streets prior to the store's opening and were greeted by enthusiastic, uniformed staff when they finally made their way inside. Apple has hired 125 employees for the new store, many employed in customer service roles. Apple plans to open two smaller stores in Australia later this year, one in Chatswood in Sydney's north, and the other in Melbourne's Chadstone Shopping Centre. As reported on Tech Talk Radio last week, the Mozilla Foundation was attempting to set a new world record by hitting 1 million downloads of its new Firefox 3 web browser in just 10 days. The download recording period officially began at 11:16 a.m. US Pacific Daylight Time on Tuesday last week. Within 14 hours, Mozilla had reported over 5 million downloads, with the number still rising. Hotspots accounting for more than 100,000 downloads include the United States with over 2 million, as well as Canada, Brazil, the UK, France and Spain. Australia did well on a per capita basis with over 83,000 downloads. Firefox is a free, open-source web browser for Windows, Mac OS X and Linux operating systems, and currently represents about 18% of all browsers in use worldwide. According to UK website Trusted Reviews, a new version of the Xbox 360 could launch at the E3 Games event in the United States next month. The move could see Microsoft eliminate the current 20GB model in favour of a 60GB version, in response to the rise of Sony's PlayStation 3 and the continued dominance of the games console market by the Nintendo Wii. Analysts are speculating that the E3 Expo might be the perfect venue for Microsoft to make the announcement. Microsoft's games consoles have been under increasing pressure from an increase in sales of PlayStation 3, attributed largely to the success of the game Metal Gear Solid 4. E3, formerly known as the Electronics Entertainment Expo, is a trade show for the computer and video games industry, held annually in the United States. And finally, the University of Melbourne is calling for expressions of interest for the construction of its Life Sciences Computation Centre. The heart of this ambitious project will be a 400 teraflop computer costing $100 million, which will rank number 4 on the top 500 supercomputer list as it stands today. Victoria's state government has guaranteed $50 million for the project, ensuring that major supercomputer vendors like IBM and Sun Microsystems will be bidding for the business. With a performance of 400 teraflops, or 400 trillion floating point operations per second, the yet-to-be-built supercomputer would rank number 4 on the top 500 list, behind IBM supercomputers housed in the United States, used by the Department of Energy. Professor Glyn Davis, Vice-Chancellor of the University of Melbourne, said that as part of the initiative, the university will develop a life sciences computation centre to provide computational biology expertise to the institutions throughout the Melbourne Parkville precinct. Tech Talk News was compiled by Dr. Ron. I'm Graham Callaghan, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Telstra has served Optus with a notice from its legal department questioning its rival's ability to provide adequate service for the newly released 3G iPhone.
It's just a case of sour grapes.
We got slapped. I'm going to slap somebody else.
Yeah, pretty much.
One guy that had such a great collection of vinyl records that he had to get his house restumped.
Huh, I can believe that.
They achieved everything they set out to achieve, and they even unblocked the toilet.
But we won't go there. You remember how we will go there, actually.
Oh, and it's hit.
Oh,
we've got a winner.
The whole tablet form factor, that sort of came and went with PCs, didn't it?
There's some smart cookies out there using their skills for evil rather than good.
Stop looking at my laptop in that tone of voice.
Sorry.
I download it without having to reinstall iTunes?
Probably not.
No. All right, go on.
And I guess Apple's way around that is, well, we've got GPS for when you're outside and we've got triangulation when you're inside.
This is the trench directly underneath where the rocket exhaust gets diverted sideways.
They might trust him more than the other player.
Oh, break. What are they doing?
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Here we are again, another Tech Talk Radio. Hello, I'm Andrew McComb. Sitting in front of me, two very willing and maybe able gentlemen, Dr. Ron and Graham Callaghan. Good evening to you both.
He's willing and I'm able.
G'day, Andrew.
How are you going?
Yeah, good, thank you very
much.
Been
talking to. How's your week been?
Yeah, so far so good. It's very early in the week. I've had lots of coffee, so we're off to a good start, I think. But yeah, anyway, a very busy tech week this week. How's your week been?
Very
You're on
busy.
Holidays still,
very
aren't
busy
you?
Oh, I'm always busier on holidays than I am when I'm actually working.
I know.
Again.
Yeah, right. I know. When he's not around, he's not around. And when he's around, he's everywhere.
around like a rissole. And we had a successful night of Linux hacking last night, Graham and I did.
Oh, we really did, didn't we?
Yeah.
That was good.
We upgraded a very, very old Red Hat Linux server.
Did you?
Oh, we didn't upgrade it at all, actually. We just completely replaced it.
That's right. Yep.
It sounds like a nerds convention, really. People will be turning off in droves.
It was.
It's exactly what it was.
We absolutely.
Came around to have an install Linux night. So.
Yes. Speaking of nerd conventions, did anyone see the Apple opening in Sydney?
I didn't get to see it. Apparently there were people lined up for miles out the front waiting to get in.
All nerds.
Were they?
Oh, yes.
What, worse than us?
Oh, yeah. What do you mean? We haven't got any bowl haircuts, have we?
Yeah, we're pretty bad.
Actually, yeah. Well, dear. Anyway, no, very interesting week. We'll talk about that very shortly. Lots of correspondence. Firstly, we apologise about the newsletter today. We don't know what went wrong. We had a meltdown somewhere.
But thank you, everybody, who brought our attention
to the
problem.
It's nice to know that a lot of people like reading our newsletter. That's all I can say.
We started replying to each one saying, thanks, we'll get onto it. And then after the 128th one rolled in by 10 a.m, we thought, oh, we'll just stop replying to these emails.
It was a bit like that, wasn't it?
Thank you for your efforts.
Thanks,
though.
Everybody.
Yes.
Some interesting correspondence in this week, too. Dr. Ron, you want to kick off this week?
Lots and lots of feedback. We've got our Tech Talk Radio Facebook group. It's doubled to 20 members. From last week. We can do better than that, guys. Come on, if you're a Facebook user, search for the Tech Talk Radio group and sign up there. It's kicking along. We've got some feedback from regular forum contributor and Facebook groupie TD. TD says, hi, guys. Whilst watching the TV last night, I nearly fell off my chair after seeing an advertisement for Telstra's Next G product where they are asking people to sign up for a 36-month plan.
Oh, yeah.
36 months, he says, with 18 exclamation marks. What planet are they on? I think I might...
The broadband department's
personally, he's going to
pushing this marketing...
He's going to hang out for the 48th month plan, TD, which is good. Keep up the good work. Love the show.
Interest-free.
Thanks, TD. What do you reckon?
Thanks,
TD. 3 years?
3 years. I mean, if you think back 3 years, what was mobile broadband like 3 years ago?
Non-existent.
That's right. And, you know, to be stuck on something, you know, a three-year-old plan when prices have come down in 3 years' time with a bit of luck, you know, that's not good.
That's crazy, isn't
it? Not good.
We've always been saying on this program, we've been recommending that people see if they can buy handsets outright, see if they can limit the amount of time that they're actually
absolutely, even your
signed
iPhone
up with somebody.
You're going to buy an outright iPhone? You're going to buy an iPhone, Dr. Ron?
I don't know. I'm very tempted, though. I like the price point. I think
we can talk about JD tonight because he's not here.
Yeah. JD sends his apologies this week. Now, Mark asks, read the empty today tonight on Tech Talk Radio email. If the email's empty, does that mean there's nothing on tonight? No, that doesn't. It's not what it means, Mark. Jeff Gates reports. Hi, Jeff. I got a new HD channel.
Yeah, g'day, Jeff. We haven't heard from Jeff for quite some time.
Superchannel.ca/series.
I had a look at this website. They're very lucky in the United States what they get on their cable. Probably damn sight better than what we get on our cable.
It shows quite a few Australian shows all in HD.
Underbelly being one of them.
And Sea Patrol. I know you guys are sometimes talking about
Sea
our
Patrol.
Shows.
What's Sea Patrol?
I thought I'd return the favour from
Sorry,
Jeff.
Sorry, I'm not watching too much television, obviously. Yeah, thanks, Jeff. That's good.
Sea Patrol's like Blue Heelers, but with boats.
It's okay.
And on Channel 9. It's no.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that at all. Underbelly's very good, though.
Underbelly's very good, yep.
That's because we originate, our program originates from the place in which that city was part of Underbelly, really, wasn't it? Very interesting about, organised crime in the city. Go and have a look. I wonder if you can get that thing on.
The controversial thing is that owing to a Supreme Court order, we're not allowed to actually broadcast it.
Oh, sorry.
What?
No, we can talk about it.
Can we talk about it?
It's legal to talk about it.
I didn't check the legal mailbox this morning when I walked in.
It's still illegal to show it here, in the city that it was set in?
I believe so, because there are court cases which are still pending, and appeal periods which are yet to expire and such things.
But you can drive 3 hours due north, cross the border at Echuca Moama,
and watch it legally.
And buy it on DVD.
Correct.
It's good, huh?
The Tech Junkie says, hey team, just writing to put my 2 cents worth in regarding GPS systems. I live about 15 kilometres north of Warrigal, which is down in Gippsland. I find the best GPS I've used for both city and country is my Nokia N95. The so-called top
That's
of the
big rap?
Yeah, the so-called top of the line in-car systems don't have a lot of the country roads once you get off the highway, whereas the N95 will find places the navman hasn't even heard of.
Is that right?
He talks a bit here about the software. He reckons it's best to leave it on. And the acquisition time is obviously a lot less if you need it in a hurry.
Yeah.
He recently upgraded his firmware to the latest version, and it's now working much
quicker.
That's always a good trick with those sorts of devices, is to keep the firmware updates.
Keep everything updated.
Yep. I'm surprised about the map thing, though, because as far as I knew, and I'll stand to be corrected on this.
Don't start.
As far as I knew, all of the GPS devices in Australia all used the same underlying map data.
Oh.
Like, they've all bought the maps from the same data source, and they've you know, put their own overlays on top of it, but they're still using the underlying data for what road is where. It comes from the one original census map, as far as I knew.
Well, Tech Junkie says that he's now looking at a GPS system using the HEMA mapping system. Is that how you pronounce it? HEMA. He says it's the four-wheel drive GPS system.
Oh, okay.
And he says, I find this is the only thing better than my N95 so far. So,
Well, there you go. That's interesting. We'll keep an eye on that.
Yeah. Let us know what you think. feedback@techtalkradio.com.au. Thanks, Tech Junkie, and everybody who's contributed this week.
I'm just being quiet over here because I'm going through my emails. There was one here I wanted to read out, but I've lost it. Isn't that always the way?
It's always the way.
So,
lost among the hundreds of what happened to the...
absolutely. We'll get to it very shortly. Hey, Firefox 3, who has?
Yes, yay. I did. Yes,
everyone,
absolutely.
Yep. I must admit, I put it on. I was one of those 8 million.
Yes, so was I.
That's a huge amount.
I was two
amount.
Of those 8 million, I think.
Two, were you?
They did well, didn't they? They did extremely well. They hit their number and doubled it and tripled it and quadrupled it.
And they've gone for the Guinness Book of Records. And I must admit, let's put records aside. What do you think of the browser, boys?
So far, I like it.
I like it.
It's faster, isn't it? Have you seen how quick it is?
It feels fast. It's user interface changes are quite nice. The little drop-down list for what websites you've gone to has got a lot of extra information on it now instead of just the web address.
What do you think about... Yes, that annoys me. But that's just me. I've got to get used to it.
It annoyed me initially too, but I'm starting to see that it might have its advantages. So yeah. It's got the title of the web page in it as well. So when you pull down that little arrow where you type the address to see what you typed last time, it's got as well as just the address of the page, it's got, you know, the title of the page and all that sort of stuff on it as well. So,
Yes, I like it. The only downside that I noticed, which was initially a bit of a bummer, was I use Google Sync to sync my browser and my web pages from machine to machine, whether I'm at the office, on the laptop, wherever I am. And that version is not supported any longer in Firefox 3. But there's a good alternative out there. Of which I think it's called Foxmarks off the top of my head.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm using that now, and that's really good too. So it works. When one door closes, others open. But when I first started loading it up, I thought, oh, here we go. Got plugins to load up. Wonder which ones aren't going to work, which ones are. And everything worked except for the Google one, and a bit of research online found that, hey, Google aren't supporting Firefox 3 with that. And I thought, oh, that's strange for the big G. But nonetheless.
I had a problem with a problem. Let me speak in English.
A problem with a problem.
Yes.
There's a tautology, really. You had no problem at all.
I didn't have a problem at all.
We're in really up the creek.
My Delicious plugin stopped working.
You and your social network sites?
Yeah.
Yes. Why? What? Why did it stop? Not compatible?
Not compatible. And it checked for updates, but there wasn't an update available.
Come on, Delicious.
Those sorts of updates will be rolling out fairly quickly, I would imagine.
Pressure's on, isn't
it? Yeah. The developers of those projects will be under pressure. Now, I had a slightly different problem with one of mine, because quite a while back I tried one of the beta versions of Firefox 3. And didn't like it because of some of the problems that still hadn't been fixed in it, and went back to Firefox 2. Now, when I loaded the real Firefox 3, I was missing some bookmarks. And what it had done is, because the way it stores bookmarks changes between version 2 and version 3, it had imported my bookmarks and turned them into a version 3 bookmark store. And then I'd gone back to version 2, I'd added more bookmarks to my version 2 bookmark store, but when I installed the full version of version 3, it only had the bookmarks that it imported the first time.
Have you found them all now?
Yep. There's a how-to on the Firefox page. You just search for missing bookmarks.
That may explain something that happened in mine, because I've lost a few. I'm sure I've lost.
That'll be what's happened. Yeah. You'll be able to go back. What you do is you just delete the file where it stores the Firefox 3 bookmarks, and it'll re-import them again from the Firefox 2 bookmark store. So, do a search on the Mozilla site for missing bookmarks, and it'll help you out with that. This is only for that issue if you've had a beta and gone back to version 2, and then the bookmarks you put in after that will have gone missing when you finally upgrade to 3.
Very good. And like all good new bits of software that come out onto the market, the bug hunters get into them. So, the bug hunters have a report, and yes, there is a bug in the new Firefox
version.
They've
only found one serious one, though, as far as I can can gather from the news.
Security researchers are wasting no time in prodding Firefox 3 for possible security holes. Just 5 hours after the browser made its public debut, the first code execution vulnerability was reported. Dun, 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 dun. Security firm Tipping Point revealed on Wednesday that it received the report via its zero-day initiative service shortly after the browser made its much publicized debut. The company would not release the name of the researcher who discovered the flaw, nor disclosing any of the details of the vulnerability until a patch is prepared. Damn good thing, too.
Yep, that's the right way to do it. Give the developers time to fix a solution before making the details public. And, that's not a criticism of Firefox, that there's a flaw that's been discovered, that the in such a complex system as a program like Firefox or any other web browser, you know, these things will occur as long as they're reported responsibly, which this person appears to have done, and patched quickly, which I'm sure the Firefox team will do, then, we're all safe.
I'm still a little disappointed, though, in the way that it renders graphics. I still think Safari, by far, is better in rendering graphics on a web page than any other browser I have seen to date.
Yeah.
That's a big call, I know, but it looks so much nicer. It's aliased better. Everything just really looks... The Apple boys do it very well.
I was impressed with Mozilla's reckoning that their new browser, or the Firefox browser, currently represents about 18% of all browsers in use worldwide. I think that was in the news.
That's a big... improvement.
It's huge. It was like 6 or 8% 12 months ago. But they've made an incredible dent in the marketplace, if that's correct.
Yeah, it's very, very well accepted throughout a lot of areas now. Everybody, lots of people know what Firefox is now, that, you don't have to be a technical guru or a bit of a nerd to know what Mozilla Firefox is. Everybody's using it.
It's funny, I had the pleasure of talking to Carol Whitelock on 891 ABC Adelaide last Friday, it was.
Yep.
And we were talking about Firefoxes and browsers and iTunes and things like that. And we got the call. What's a browser? And they're good. Those questions are so good because a lot of people are just a bit afraid to put their hand up, and that's what we're here to do.
Yeah,
we're
absolutely.
Here to dispel those things. If you think it's a silly question, it's not.
It's
because there's a million other people out there going, what's a browser?
It's the sort of thing that people would use on a daily basis and maybe not even realize that's what it's called. If you said to them, well, that's your Internet Explorer or it's your Mozilla Firefox that you run up when you want to go on the internet, and they'd say, oh, I know what that is.
Yeah.
Now, of course, technically, I'm going to have to put you up there because it's not the internet.
I know. I deliberately said that. I just can't. I go to the internet.
A web browser is a device, a piece of software for viewing web pages, which is only one of the services that can run over the internet.
Indeed.
The internet can carry other things apart from web pages. We tend to use that terminology sloppily, and it can confuse non-technical people as well as technical people.
What other services can you do on the internet?
Oh, no.
Email would be the most obvious one.
There you go.
Simple mail transfer protocol to move email about the place.
What about FTPing for moving files around?
FTP for moving files around, which we do a lot with, people will use FTP to, if they created a website, to upload it to their web host. And, of course, we use it a lot to update the things like the podcast and the Tech Talk Radio website and things like that.
File sharing,
BitTorrent, those sorts of things.
Copyright breaching.
Yep,
copyright breaching protocol.
Now, bear in mind,
CBP.
Yeah, now you've done yet another one. This is another one of these traps you've fallen into.
Pointing the finger at me.
No, I was pointing at him before. Now I'm pointing at you because you've associated BitTorrent with copyright breaching, which is not necessarily fair.
I didn't do that. That's a gross generalisation.
No, you did.
That was my accusation.
Someone could have emailed me a song.
That's right. But yes, BitTorrent has legitimate uses. It's not solely aimed at moving copyright music. Yeah.
You're saying how's Lost going in HD, Dr. Ross?
You're saying it's a gross generalisation because there's lots of way to breach copyright.
Absolutely.
That's right.
Not just peer-to-peer.
Right. Now, before we get into this hole too far, let's talk about completely throwing everything out of the window at the moment. IP traffic to double every 2 years, IP being Internet Protocol, what the boys have just been talking about. Web traffic volumes will almost double every 2 years from 2007 to 2012, driven by none other than video and Web 2.0 applications. This is according to Cisco Systems.
Yep.
Increased usage of video and social networking has created what Cisco calls virtual networking, which has raised traffic volumes at a compound annual growth of around 46%. So, once again, we were talking about this on another radio station recently too, about how the internet is going to ground to a halt fairly rapidly with the amount of spam that's out there, with the amount of demand on broadband for video and things like that. If plumbing isn't increased, guys, we're going to get... It's a bit like a drought, really, isn't it? It's going to be dripping out the pipe at this end.
Yeah, we're only just getting to the point where it's viable to send you know, full quality standard definition video over the internet using advanced compression, you know, like MPEG-4 and that sort of stuff. And, of course, the very next thing that's going to happen is that we're moving, our television networks are all moving to high-definition formats, HD, and we're going to be wanting to download Lost in HD next.
We are. Some people in this organisation are.
Some people are, yeah, not us
specifically. With their excessively big bandwidth. Adam Turner's got something to say about that. Not downloading Lost, but just bandwidth in general.
And that combined with all the other things, is going to put a huge demand on the bandwidth. So what's the government's target that we all should have for our broadband?
Well, it's 12, but I think it's obsolete
12,
by now.
12 megabits per second?
Yep.
Yep, not enough.
Absolutely.
Not enough.
We should be targeting 60
to
100.
That's what I've got at home now,
I know.
It's
Foxtel debuted HD in their little arrangements just recently.
Foxtel being cable network, cable television supplier in Australia.
Exactly. There's been a lot of ho-hum about all this sort of stuff. And
Foxtel, I'd be ho-humming. Is it real HD or is it Foxtel HD?
Well, yes, it's a very good question you ask. Personally,
Foxtel,
I haven't seen it.
Foxtel standard definition looks like it's been sent through RealPlayer or something. It's, yeah.
Yes.
Don't start me.
I thought that's where it was served by a RealPlayer server. Yes.
Mm. But I tell you what, real high-definition television, when looked at on a real high-definition set without any too much compression, looks absolutely fantastic. And I hate to say that most methods of transmission these days, excluding Blu-ray, makes HD look like standard def in a lot of respects. So if you can notice the difference at home between HD and standard def, you should see a real HD picture. It'll it's like looking through a window. It really is. So, but anyway, Foxtel did a little bit of a debut the other day, so you can now get 720p and 1080i down the Foxtel cable, allegedly. But once again, that's a standard. We should talk about that, actually, because do you know what
the differences are? Did it have a little asterisk beside the claim with a little footnote in small type saying our network is able to support this, but we won't be supporting this, and written and authorised by Foxtel Incorporated?
Someone sent us a very interesting email about Foxtel and their subscription recently. Do you remember that?
What did they send?
Someone sent us a very Foxtel-ish sort of offer. Someone made an offer in Foxtel. Was that you?
No.
Oh, okay. Forget what I just said. Edit that out of the podcast.
They emailed it to us, did they?
Someone sent a very funny Foxtel email. One of our listeners sent us a very funny Foxtel email someone's offer and to take your
very,
offer.
Go rude.
And do something with your offer.
Stick it where it fits. Yeah, we'll find
that. But that's the sentiment. The reason why I brought that up, because now I'm glad you remember that, because the reason why I brought that up is because a lot of people don't think highly of the technical quality that comes down the Foxtel cable. And I still don't think you can get Channel 7 there, although there's rumours that you might be able to get 7 free-to-air on it very shortly. This is the digital channel anyway.
Yeah, right, you get it, but it's a copy of the analog, not a copy of the digital.
Okay. Hey, I bought a new toy on the weekend, but before we go there, let's just talk briefly about 720i and 1080. 720p and
1080i.
Do you know the difference between all these sort of broadband specs? Because a lot of people just don't know what the numbers mean. Do you know what the P stands for? Do you know what the I stands for?
I do. I know what they stand for. I've got a bit of an idea as to what they mean, but I'm not an expert in the field. I know I is for interlaced.
That's correct.
P is for progressive.
Progressive, yeah.
Okay. Yes, that's very good, Dr. Ron.
And you're going to ask me to explain those terms now, aren't you?
No. Well, it's quite easy to explain those terms. Back in the good old days, when television was but a lad, and also monochrome. Do you remember black and white?
I do remember black and white. We had a black and white TV when I was a young'un.
Yeah, absolutely. What used to happen is they used to put this vacuum tube in front of you and they put phosphor on it and then throw electrons at it through a vacuum and it would glow. That was the principle behind television. Okay, and this electron beam would go to line 1, line 2, line 3, all the way down to line 525 or 625, depending upon which country you're in. But the problem was the phosphor didn't glow too long. You know, when your little electron beam hit it.
By the time it started in the top left corner of the screen and ended in the bottom right corner of the screen.
It was all dark.
By the time it had gone
in the top,
through, the very start had finished. It had faded away.
Now, that was the first attempt at progressive television.
Yep.
One to the bottom line, 525 or 625, in a progressive manner.
So it just starts at the start and ends at the end.
Yeah, so do this, everybody. Sit in front of you, grab your hands, and put your fingers in between each other. And you can actually see the lines of your fingers go in between one and each other.
Yep.
Now, that is called interlace. You're interlacing your fingers. Now, what happens to overcome this problem? The engineer said, well, let's do all the odd lines first and then come back and do all the even lines. So the ripple wouldn't go up and down the screen.
Yeah, so even though the first lot of lines would fade out, they wouldn't be all bunched at the top of the screen. They'd be evenly spaced down the screen.
Exactly.
And there'd be another line right beside it that had just been lit up.
That's exactly right. And hence the word interlace. So there's the I.
So it scans all the odd-numbered lines and then goes back to the top, scans all the even-numbered lines, and then goes back and starts again.
Absolutely. And that's the interlace. And
how many times does it do that a second?
Well, you talk about each... the odd-numbered lines would be one field, the even-numbered lines would be a second field. So right. you talk it's about
25
50 fields per second.
25 frames in a second?
25 frames in a second. So the two scans takes a 25th of a second.
That's in PAL. If you're listening to us in the other parts of the world, it's 30 frames.
Yeah, or 29.99996.
Yeah, we round to 30 in this program. So anyway, that explains progressive and interlaced. Now, your computer
the
screen...
720 and the 1080, that's the actual number
the actual
of horizontal
number of lines.
Hey, yeah, that's exactly right.
Gotcha.
Now, in true high definition, we have 1080i, which is 1080 interlaced, or you can have 1080p, which is progressive. But no one really does 1080p. It's a bit tricky for the guys, a bit hard to do. So the best you're probably going to get... Well, your Blu-ray will do 1080p. I think the new Blu-ray stuff really pushes the...
And if your screen will do it.
If your screen will do it. That's the thing. If your screen will do it. So when you go shopping for these great new television, these whiz-bang things, and everyone goes, yes, it's truly HD compliant. Well, firstly, you want to make sure you can get 1080 lines out of it, which is 1080 horizontal lines. And by the way, do you know how many pixels wide it is?
No.
No? Well, here we go. They're 1920 pixels by 1080 pixels.
Oh, yeah.
So if you get a crayon out, a very, very big sheet of paper, and draw 1920 dots across the top, and then draw 1080 dots down the side, that's the resolution of high-definition television.
See, all these numbers are making... They've got some significance to me, because when you set resolutions on computer monitors... You can have 1280 by 1024.
I'm glad that's you mentioned that, Dr. Ron.
Resolution.
Do you like the resolution of your computer screen? Do you think it works really well?
No,
it's nice and sharp. Oh, no, actually, you got CRTs. Forget that.
Yeah, forget me. Go to Graham.
Exactly. Graham?
Mine's nice and sharp, yeah.
Actually, well, you're looking at a progressive image on your computer screen.
That's right. And I'm
not
looking at
a
fast progressive image, too. I'm looking at 60 hertz, too.
Yeah. And if you actually put a video or a DVD onto your computer screen, it doesn't look awful.
It can,
it looks soft
yes.
and furry and yuck, yes. whereas it looks reasonably good on your television set.
Although, my DVD on my computer screen, although it looks soft and furry and yuck compared with, a digital camera photograph that I've taken, it looks sharper on my computer screen than it does on my television.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Yep, good. All right, now let's get back to Foxtel.
Back to Foxtel.
720p. 720 lines progressive is what they're touting that they'll be broadcasting. And they've also said that they will be supporting 1080i as well.
Now, just for comparison, if 720 lines progressive is a high-definition picture, how many lines in a standard-definition picture?
625 in PAL.
Okay.
So it's not that much difference.
What about, and that's the same in standard definition
and this is
digital?
This is the pseudo high def that they talk about, you know, in true HD.
So there's not a big difference between 600 odd and 700 odd.
No, just progressive and interlace.
Oh, okay. So effectively, yeah. So that makes it look twice as sharp.
Yeah, twice as sharp, but not as many lines.
Ah. Okay.
So there you go.
Yep.
So without getting too complex, does that explain how all the numbers work and the I's and the P's and
it does.
All that?
Does.
So
I
now
like
when
it,
you
yeah.
go shopping and the salesman says, yeah, it does HD, 720, but you go, but it doesn't do 1080i. Next week we'll talk about HDMI and things like that.
Ooh. That's the interface that you run the video through.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Now, before we get too over tonight, I bought a new gadget.
Yeah, you mentioned this before. What did you buy?
I bought a new set-top box /PVR on the weekend, a new Strongbox. Strong is the manufacturer.
Oh, now, Strong are the good ones, are they?
Well, it's my choice of set-top box. I'm in the industry, so that's what I bought. The reason why I bought this...
So this is not a cheapie. This is not the Wintel one from Radio Parts. This is...
No.
This is...
The reason why I bought it, because I wanted to be able to record high definition, standard definition television, but I didn't want to be locked into having a personal video recorder with a hard drive in it. So this guy has got a USB 2 port on the front, which means you can stick anything you like into it, including a memory stick. So imagine that. You go down, instead of buying blank DVDs, just go buy yourself an 8 gig stick, and away you go.
That's a good idea. So it just writes straight to the USB port, doesn't
exactly
it?
Right. And when you want to then burn it to a DVD or watch it or plug in a removable hard drive, whatever you want to do, you've got complete flexibility. And which is just fantastic. So now, you take your memory stick up, you can burn it to DVD, and you've got it.
Oh, okay. That was going to be my next question. Does it write in a format that other things can understand?
Yes and no. You need a bit of software to do the translation from the set-top box, because the high definition is a different format than your average DVD. So you need a little bit of conversion software to do it for you. But it's relatively cheap and freely available, and you search on Google, you'll find it, because that's exactly what I did. So picture quality, absolutely stunning. Absolutely stunning.
Oh, very good.
So it's well worth it. So that's a new Strongbox. But that was my gadget. That's what I bought. Also bought another
hugely
gadget.
Hugely expensive?
Well, the recommended retail price is around about $550.
Okay.
And
So that's not hugely expensive for what it is then, is it?
No, no, no. But all the white goods dealers, they go for a bargain these days. And if you pay any more than $450 for it, let's say you'd be ripped off.
Yeah. Okay. So it's got two tuners in it, so you can record one show. No, it's only one tuner.
Single tuner.
Okay.
Single tuner.
Yep. So what you do there is you buy a television that's got a tuner built into it as well, so you can record something on your set-top box while you watch something directly on your TV.
Absolutely right. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron Graham, Callaghan, Andrew McComb, and we are going on a little bit this evening, but that's all right. That's what we do here on Tech Talk Radio.
That's what we do.
Before we go to the break, Microsoft are going to re-release some security fixes. Now, this is a bit of a whoops, isn't it?
Re-release security fixes.
I've never heard of re-releasing security fixes. Like, what happened the first time, Microsoft? Patch their patches, too, right. Microsoft has reissued an ineffective security patch it released earlier this month. My machine was updating today, actually.
Hopefully they've issued an effective one, not reissued an ineffective one.
It's like a defective notice, really, isn't it? Put a yellow canary on your
operating system.
That's it,
yes.
Sorry.
Can be taken to the nearest IT repair store only.
Absolutely, within 7 days.
That's right.
Oh, dear. The company posted an update to its bulletin, which they have these little bulletins and things like that.
Yep.
The patch was meant to address a remote code execution vulnerability in Windows XP and Vista, its two flagship operating systems, which has been deemed critical by the security of Microsoft. The original version was patch posted to the 10th of June and was fixed, but Windows 2000 and Windows Server were not subject to either of these security bulletins. So make sure you do your upgrades is really the moral of the story.
Yep.
Have you done yours recently, Graham? Because mine was whirring away again today with yellow things and please install me before I shut down type sort of stuff. What was that about?
All my workstations I have set to do automatic updates. So they update, even if I forget to go and do it, they do it themselves. And all my servers, I have them download and put the little yellow thing up so that they remind me to install them when I log in to do my other checks.
Your little yellow thing, a canary.
Little yellow exclamation mark thing that sits in your system tray.
Absolutely. Good. So you did it and all was well.
Yep.
Absolutely. Fantastic. It's good when it works.
It is.
They do not work some of the times, which I've experienced.
Just once in a while there's a update that causes a problem, but yeah, you're far more often going to be protected by them. If you don't do your updates, you're very, very vulnerable to attack from spyware and things like that. So yeah, definitely worth doing the Windows updates.
All right. I did find that email I was referring to when you were reading all the emails before.
Very good.
Oh, yes. I just had a bit of a thing. It says, this is from Diane and Bruce D. G'day, fellows. I'm a regular listener to your podcast of your show. I found it through ABC Local Radio and think you're doing a fantastic job. I have suggestions for a possible future topic. Some months ago, I acquired a GPS car navigation system and it works well. As I see, though, where it really is handy is when driving overseas. That's good. I didn't think of that.
Oh, yeah.
Yep, driving overseas with it?
I used it driving overseas. I went to Tasmania.
Here it is. Yes, good. Sorry. Well done. Unfortunately, obtaining overseas maps seems to be impossible. My questions are maps available for units interchangeably? I don't know. That's a very good question.
Generally, you can go to the manufacturer's website and you need to pay some extra money to get the maps for a different country, but you can buy the maps and download them and put them on your little memory card and stick them in the unit. Usually the way it goes.
So a lot of the units have memory cards, do they? Like for SD cards?
Yeah, a lot of them
do. Can you flash them like you do a computer and stuff like that? Is that how they go in or you've got to run them in the memory card?
No, you put it on the memory card or a lot of them connect via USB cable to your computer and you just load the new maps on, yeah.
And is this common for most of them, like the Garmins and the TomToms?
Look, the one I've got the experience with is the TomToms, and yeah, that's very straightforward with a TomTom. I'm sure the others are going to be pretty much the same. You go to the website and update the maps.
Yeah, make sure you haven't got Wherries, because I reckon Wherries will stop at the ocean. That's the local telephone company version of maps.
Yeah, and that doesn't work just for overseas maps. I mean, in Melbourne, they're just about in the next few days, they're going to open a new major toll road. Which is going to need to be incorporated into the maps on all your navigation devices. So people are going to have to go and, if they want that map to that road to be part of their maps, they're going to have to go and buy an upgraded map for their GPS navigator.
And it's not just for being able to drive on and off exits and entries onto the tollway. It's also for calculating routes and quickest routes and least congested traffic.
And that's just a major example. But, of course, in a city like Melbourne, there's roads being opened and closed all the time. Mm. Small roads, small changes. A road gets blocked, something gets opened up. So, over time, the maps do get out of date and you need to even update the maps.
Like your operating system.
For the local
area. Do your updates.
Area. Yeah.
I've never bought one of these devices. Do you get an upgrade when maps, like, you know, do you get directory this current year, but wait, you get a bonus directory for the next year as well? Or do they just, you get them for, like when you buy Street Directory, that's it?
Yeah, you keep the device and you buy the new map for it.
Okay. Just like you would a Street Directory.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, good. I might buy one of these days. I know how passionate you are about them, Graeme.
Well, I'm just passionate about using them carefully.
Exactly.
go back a few shows, you'll find out what that's all about.
Now, Dr. Ron, you had a wonderful opportunity to speak to one of our panellists from farther afield.
I did.
Lid, during the course of the week.
She said to say hello, passes on her regards.
She won't take my calls anymore. I don't know what's going
you
on.
You won't take anyone's call. You turned your phone off and stuck it in the glove box today and drove your car into a lead-filled underground car park.
I told you why. Now, moving right along.
I did. I caught up with Lydia Davis during the week, and she's TikTok Radio's Silicon Valley correspondent, and she writes blogs and optimizes websites professionally. She knows all about this good stuff. She's got her finger on the pulse when it comes to the blogosphere, and I asked her about her take on the brouhaha at the moment that's surrounding the National Australia Bank.
Well, last week, the National Australia Bank effectively spammed the comment section of various blogs in Australia. Now, this annoys me.
What do you mean they've spammed comment sections? What have they done? Logged onto people's private blogs and just put advertising there on in the blog comments or something?
What they did was, this was actually a thought-out PR plan. And this is another bugbear with me. PR agencies are getting it so wrong. So what they've done is they've said, we've got some news. We want to push that out into the community. Rather than actually contact the blog owners and say, hey, do you guys want to talk to us about this? Or would you consider running a competition to give away X product? What they did was they went to all these blogs. They picked one called the AFL Player Spectator blog.
AFL as in our football down here in Melbourne?
Yeah. Because they were giving away free tickets to the Collingwood versus Carlton game to launch their SMS banking service. So what they did was they thought, okay, what we'll do, and they did this. This was a strategy that their PR agency, and I don't know who they are, but I really want to say their name, so I'm just going to have to hunt it down, Cox and Innall. They wrote this little message, and this is the message. Hi, guys. NAB is giving away free tickets for the Collingwood versus Carlton game on Saturday afternoon at the MCG. Hop on down to Fed Square tomorrow. This is all to launch a new NAB SMS banking. Thank you. What they did was they just went to various blogs and went, bang, here's our comment. And it had nothing to do with what the blog post was about or what the blog itself was about, because the AFL
players... So how did they pick the actual blogs? Why did they think these particular blogs would be relevant?
I think they searched AFL blogs because that's what they were talking about. They figured, okay, we'll just do a Google search. This is, in fact, how the guy tracked them down. Someone had gone and done a Google search on AFL blogs and been sent to his webpage or to his blog. And this is all they've done. They've gone and searched AFL blogs, not read them, not actually found out who the person is, and just gone, bang, this is our message, read it. And they've left it on any old post. So, you know, whether the post has got anything to do with them or not is irrelevant. And that's so wrong, because from the blogosphere, this is considered spam. This is not considered a good way to promote or market anything. What they should have done is basically check out the blog. And I know it takes time, and this is what everyone has a complaint about. But it takes me too long. I haven't got the time. I've got to get this out. Well, if you want to do it this way, you need to do it a certain way. There is etiquette. You know, it's like email. It's when you meet someone, you don't go to them and hand out a card and say, okay, this is who I am, see you later, goodbye. You know, there's a bit of etiquette involved where you actually need to find out what is the blog, who does the blog, and then potentially, if you are interested in promoting your product, you know, why not contact the blogger? But, you know, to go into the comment section of someone's blog and just leave a really bad ad just sucks. And until PR agencies get that, there's going to be all sorts of problems. And you would know this, being involved in news and stuff.
I wonder if they've had any way of gauging the effect that those comments had on people attending the event. Do you know if the comments were left up or if the blog owners were so furious they just ripped all the comments down straight away? Or, I don't know if we've got any intelligence, I guess, on how successful their campaign was.
I don't know how successful it is. I know the blogosphere is pissed about it, and they're basically saying, you know, black ban them. In fact, if you're a client there, leave. You know, that's been going on Twitter. It has. It has been going on Twitter, like, the last few days. They've been saying, if you're at the NAB, you know, move over to, you know, ANZ.
I wonder how the NAB would react if I just suddenly walked in off the street with a megaphone and stood in the middle of their branch in the middle of Melbourne and started saying, hey, everybody, come and tune into Tech Talk Radio tonight on this radio station and have a listen to our technology program. Like, the manager would be out there. They'd call the police, wouldn't
absolutely.
They? They'd say, get out of our bank branch. What the hell do you think you're doing?
Absolutely. And this is what they don't get. And, I mean, the bank's actually standing behind what the PR agency did. And I think they have to because, you know, that's where their loyalty is. But, boy, you know, if it was me, I don't know, I'd be turning around saying, you're fired, and find me someone that actually knows how the blogosphere works, if I want to work within it. I haven't looked at the blog, so I can't tell you whether the comments have been deleted. I wouldn't have a clue. But, I mean, it just smacks of all the Viagra stuff that I get on my blog and, you know, all that sort of horrible...
Well, it was going to be my next question. With the you know, the anti-spam utilities that there are for blogs, there's automated anti-spam programs. Like, is Akismet one of them, or you know better than I do about this sort of stuff? Is he dealing with it every day?
Yeah, Akismet is WordPress's product, and I like it. It catches a lot of stuff. It lets a few things through, and you know, one of the problems is that it doesn't know everything, and it's forever learning. So if you do see something and you do have a blog, and you see something like that, I'd actually mark it as spam. Now, that's an interesting thing, because
hopefully they can teach Akismet to pick up on this sort of stuff so that next time it comes along, if it does come along, it'll just get automatically spammed into the wilderness.
But the thing that I look at here, and that's not taking this as seriously as they should, because Akismet is used worldwide. I mean, I don't know how many blogs WordPress hosts and how many... but it's a ton. You know, we're talking millions. We're not talking one or two. So, you know, if Akismet suddenly picks up the words NAB as a spam word, if enough people have hit spam this on that comment, soon NAB will get, not only NAB, but everything mentioned in there, AFL, all those keywords that were mentioned in that, what is it, NAB, Collingwood versus Carlton, that'd be fairly decent, you know, MCG, that'd be set as spam. So next time someone sends out something true, like a real comment from somewhere that has anything to do with that, you know, it could be automatically thrown into spam.
Well, if it's relevant, you know, even if it's automated, I suppose, but if it's relevant to what they're doing and it's current and it makes
absolutely.
Sense, then you would. But if it's just something out of left field that's got no relevance to what you're doing whatsoever, then you're just going to bury it, aren't you?
But I think you've hit the nail on the head, because this is it. With the blogosphere, it can't be automated. And this is where PR agencies are just falling over, because they have to automate it. They've got hundreds, you know, if not thousands of emails to send out, and they've got to automate that in some way. I mean, I was receiving letters saying, dear ampersand, you know, percentage sign name percent, you know.
It's not a good look, is it?
No. So, you know, that was deleted immediately. So they've got to have, you know, they've got to start getting a clue. It can be mostly automated with maybe just, you know, hi Lydia or hi Dr. Ron, whatever it is, just to give you a bit more, I don't know, feel for the person to at least entice you into looking at it. So until they...
Yeah, I must admit, I've had emails like that before as well, and they say, yeah, dear percentage 20 something or other, and you think, oh, what is this garbage?
Yeah, it is, and it is, and it's that web junk. I call it web junk, and that's all it is, and it's just all over the web at the moment, and I think it's become such a big thing now because of social media, blogging, all that sort of stuff. Everyone's publishing, so of course there's more junk, and it's going to take a little while for it to be all sorted out, but once it does, it'll be very nice, I think, out there on the web.
Lyd, we'll follow this with the National Australia Bank closely. Thank you for your input this week. It's very much appreciated.
You're very welcome.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Nothing like a woman scorned.
NAB, web junk. She wasn't happy.
Oh,
I can understand that too. It's pretty rude.
Yeah, you'd sort of hope, though, that it's someone at the NAB who just doesn't have a clue, or at the ad agency, who just doesn't understand what it is that they've done and why it's offensive.
It's more the ad agency.
And yeah, and that hopefully that... Yeah, they'll learn from the
I just don't understand the
negative publicity.
Yet.
That's right, yeah.
They really don't.
And as long as sort of the message gets out that, you know, to the corporate world that this is not an acceptable way to behave, you're going to get more bad publicity from this than good. then, you know, maybe it won't happen again.
Hope it's a learning experience for
exactly
everybody.
Exactly right, yeah. Mm. You'd hope that that's the way it'll play out, and that it wasn't sort of a someone who did understand how offensive it was who made the decision to do this. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron Graham-Kelly and Andrew McComb here on the panel this evening. We're going to take our first break for the evening. If you're listening to the 50-minute program, better download the podcast because there's a lot more to talk about. All right, we've got Adam Turner coming up after the break, and we'll be back with more in a moment.
You're listening.
Tech Talk. Any questions? You're all speechless over this.
No, you're listening.
You've got the world's most aggressive spam filter.
TikTok.
You're listening.
If you've got the wrong SIM card, it's because they sold you the wrong thing.
Tech Talk Radio.
We may have digressed. The network's probably ready for fiber to the node now.
Telstra has lost the ACCC court case.
They download loss because they can't stand watching it on commercial television.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You are indeed listening to Tech Talk Radio. Welcome back, wherever you might be listening to us, anywhere in the world via any of the wonderful methods of communications we have these days. Podcasting, streams, all sorts of things. It's good like that, isn't
Maybe even on the good old-fashioned wireless.
Oh, now there's a thought. What a concept.
Yeah.
That sounds very romantic, really, doesn't it? Listening on the radio.
Yes.
Speaking of someone listening to us on the stream a long, 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 long way away, Jeff is in Ohio. Yeah, you just sent us the email through that you read out before.
Oh, about Jeff Gates. Yeah, G'day, Jeff.
Jeff Gates. He says, you know, we're talking about underbelly in Melbourne, people in Melbourne can't see underbelly. He says, that's really goofy about not being able to see underbelly there. Now, what would be really sick would be for me to tape the show here and post it to you guys.
Yeah. people have thought of this already, actually, Jeff.
Yeah, Jeff, it's been done before. I think more people in Melbourne have probably seen underbelly than care to admit, but nonetheless.
We all went into state and watched it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Is that what happened?
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
It's all good, I'm sure. Thanks for the offer, Jeff. Hello to JD, who is listening. He sends his regards.
Another parent-teacher interview, JD. Goodness me, you've got lots of kids, haven't you?
I think that's what it was. Yes, we're also Twittering. I'm Twittering on my Twitter device tonight.
I'm good.
RK5075 is the name that I'm using, if you'd like to follow me.
Is anyone saying anything interesting
on
Twitter?
No, somebody told me, a little bird told me, that I have to follow people if I want to see messages from them.
Yeah.
I don't understand why that would work like that. Why wouldn't you just send, you put the @ there and then the person's name and you'd get a message from anyone if they knew what your name was. They should just be able to send you a message.
My Twitter bookmark was one of those ones that went in the Firefox upgrade. I don't know where it went.
Yeah, you can send a message directly, but if they just update their status, you won't see it unless you're following them.
Oh, that's all right. So people can still send me a message.
Yeah.
Oh, that's all right.
But you won't see their status changes when Lydia comes out of the library or whatever it was.
But if you look like someone Leo Laporte in the US, who's very highly respected podcaster and IT
you could follow him.
Person,
yep.
I have started following him, but he's got thousands or tens of thousands of people following him. You wouldn't want to see tens of thousands of messages.
No.
Would you?
No.
If you had that number?
It's a lot.
It is.
Hmm.
But interesting, interesting stuff. Good technology.
Hmm.
And Andrew is yet to be convinced, but...
Yeah, no, it's asking me to sign in again. I can't remember my password anymore. No, I'll do it again later.
That old chestnut.
Absolutely. Hey, speaking of old chestnuts, Telstra. On again, off again. Maybe we will, maybe we won't.
Where are we going to buy the iPhone?
Well, last Friday when I was on air, it looked like they'd missed out and they hadn't managed to do it.
Well, the start of the week, last week, they were saying that.
Yep. And then all of a sudden, the 5 o'clock press release comes out, and guess what?
Telstra iPhones.
Yeah, it's going to be a couple of weeks late, but at least that means the rural customers of Australia can use Telstra and use NextG, knowing full well that
they're going to get... the world's most expensive phone network.
That's exactly right.
Oh, sorry, the world's most expensive phone network.
Expansive. You've misread that word again.
I'm sure it's one of those two. I'm not sure which.
So
it's like the uniformed Apple employees. We weren't sure if it was supposed to be uninformed or uniform. I hate those typos. It's a tricky thing, the English language. One little letter and...
It is. One comma in the wrong spot and it can just change the course of history.
Car.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right then, so Telstra iPhones.
It appears as though Telstra will belatedly jump on the iPhone bandwagon and will offer Apple's 3G mobile device some 2 weeks after rivals Optus and Vodafone make it available to the public. Now, this is only going to do good things for the consumer because it means there's going to be one hell of a price war on the gadget, the must-have gadget
where
for all the Apple files and all those sort of people.
Where you're going to get your iPhone from? Are you going to get a Vodafone one or a Telstra one? And, of course, the big difference is the network.
too right.
The Telstra 3G network on 850 meg.
Yep, in the metro area, not going to be too much of a hassle, regardless of the provider that you use. But in the countryside, whoa, that's a different kettle.
But even
of fish.
In the metro area, if it, you know, your next G phone with on 850 meg is going to work a lot better inside buildings, in car parks.
True.
You know, in the boardroom. Wherever you might be using your...
In the theatre?
In the theatre, yeah.
Videotaping and transmitting... Oh!
Well, look, you never know.
Actually, but, you can't do that on this thing. It's got a camera in it, but it doesn't have MMS capabilities or anything
off,
like
no.
that.
No. So, but yeah, I mean, those sorts of things do make a difference. But to get that really good network from Telstra, you're going to pay for it.
Okay, well, although Telstra has not yet made public its agreement with Apple, the telco previously hinted that the sale of the iPhone would be inevitable.
Inevitable,
yes. This is what
Fair
ITN
enough.
Is reporting. So
I'm sure someone's trying to evert it anyway.
Yes, with Telstra joining Optus and Vodafone as stockists of the 3G iPhone, Australia will now become one of the most competitive iPhone markets anywhere in the world.
Well, fantastic.
I wonder if you can buy them outright. We'll find out on July the 11th, I reckon, won't we?
I doubt that you will.
But I think the ACCC would have something to say about that, which is our consumer watchdog.
Well, there's competition, but is the ACCC going to force them to sell it outright?
Well, who knows? I don't know. We'll wait and see. If anyone's
got any... they've tightened it up to make it less possible to get one outright in the United States.
Well, there you go. I'm an outright phone buyer. If I can't buy it outright, I won't buy it.
But think of other things that you can't buy outright that you do just subscribe to and you take it for granted that that's how it works. I'm thinking along the lines of cable TV subscriptions.
Yeah.
You don't just buy it.
Yeah, but that's a broadcaster. That's not a device. That's not a bit of hardware that you own, eventually. You don't own.
Yeah, you buy the subscription and they loan you the hardware to use to receive it.
You can't just buy the thing outright and then
buy
hope for the best.
Foxtel IQ, no.
No.
So
maybe that they will get away with it.
Yep.
Who knows?
It'll be a big market. See what happens.
Interesting times. It's never been a productive relationship, has it, between Telstra and Apple?
No.
Since Greg Wynne said he's... infamous.
Stick to your knitting.
Yeah, that's the one.
That's a good comment. Good call, Telstra.
And Apple have said, who's this little funny little backwater telco upstart down under there? Oh, we don't need to have anything to do with them. And
yes. Anyway, bandwidth. It's a big issue in this country, isn't it? Whether it be mobile, whether it be otherwise. Texas, interesting part of the world. George W. comes from Texas.
Big hats.
Yeah, big hats.
I think of Texas.
Lots of broadband. Hats. Lots of free broadband.
Oh, really?
Unlimited. Is free wrong choice of words, Andrew.
Unlimited
downloads. Until recently, as Adam Turner is about to tell us.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch on Tech Talk Radio.
Time Warner cable users in the US may lose their God-given right to unlimited downloads. Texans have been threatened with download caps and excess usage fees. My heart bleeds for them. It really does. Time Warner Cable has started a riot in the blogosphere by threatening to restrict users to a paltry 40 gigabytes per month and charging them a whopping $1 per gigabyte for excess data usage. This is on a 15 megabits per second service costing $55 a month. As a long-time Australian broadband user, I feel their pain. I mean, come on, Time Warner. 40 gig per month, that's only 1.3 gig per day. How can anyone survive on such rations? Sure, it means practically unlimited email, instant messaging, web browsing, VoIP, and streaming music and downloads, but that only leaves 1 gig a day for other forms of entertainment. How can any civilized person make do with only 10 full-length movies per week or 20 television shows? What if someone wants to download a disk image, a Linux distro, or a bunch of system updates? That's one less movie they can watch that week. Time Warner, can you live with yourself if a customer is forced to pay an extra dollar to download a movie? Do you really want that person's pain and suffering on your conscience? So far, Time Warner Cable is only trialing the new limits on customers in Beaumont, Texas, so it's not too late to fight back. Maybe we can call out the National Guard, or George W. can liberate Beaumont and bring about regime change to protect his fellow Texans' constitutional right to watch Juice 24/7 whilst downloading terabytes of porn. Perhaps it would be easier to find another country with vast bandwidth reserves and invade it, in the name of democracy, of course. Why should the 5% of Time Warner Cable subscribers who use up to 50% of the company's available bandwidth be punished in this way? Why should these people be forced to cough up some loose change if they exceed their monthly limit by a mere gigabyte?
Why should they be expected to show a little restraint so there's enough bandwidth for everyone? What is this, communist Russia? Sure, there are some whingers who don't understand the pain and suffering Beaumont's internet community is going through, like those people sucked into signing up for 2-year, 200 megabyte per month plans with $130 per gigabyte excess data charges, or those dodos with free ADSL 2 Plus, which is shaped to 64 kilobits per second after 150 megabytes. Or anyone who lives in a country where the dominant telco can hold the country to ransom because it owns the copper and is threatening to do the same again with fibre to the node. Sure, those people won't understand Beaumont's pain, but that's the price that they pay for living in the third world. In a civilised land like Texas, who can survive on 40 gig per month? I say it's time for a class action. If I was forced to pay an extra dollar to download the latest blockbuster movie the week before it's released in the cinema, I'd be on the phone to my lawyer faster than you can say punitive damages. What Time Warner Cable is doing is un-American. If Texans can't have unlimited downloads, the terrorists win.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
I think Adam's the latest customer of Slater and Gordon, don't you think? Bring on a class action. Who is he going to have a class action against, though?
The Texans must look at us here and just laugh.
Hmm.
Yeah, that'd be one way of looking at
this
us over
really
here.
Really is a backwater.
They might cry. Yeah, you poor people over there.
That's, no, they wouldn't.
I don't think Adam's holding back these days. I think he's just he's not mincing words. It's just out it comes. Out it comes. The Dodo, the Telstra. Good on you. I think that's very good. Put it on the table where it all counts because that's what we do here at Tech Talk Radio.
He stepped outside of his digital living room there to an extent.
He did.
He stepped into the digital computer room.
Really got his goat up, didn't he?
Yeah. Oof. Yes.
Anyway, he's probably listening to us on his chumby in his bedroom as he does this time
we
of night.
He was going to do a review of that. Do you know what a chumby is?
What?
He's chumby.
What's chumby? A chumby?
Well, I asked exactly the same question and he just sent me back a URL like chumby.com.
I asked him a question and he said, I'm doing the review. Stay tuned.
Oh, is
so
he?
I think he's going to do something for us.
It's a little like internet radio thing from what I can see
briefly. Wi-Fi alarm clocky thing.
Chumby.com.
Right. I think it's .com anyway. Could be wrong. Could be wrong. There you go. Andrew's just sent us an email, Twitter, Facebook. Hi, guys. Okay, make it 22 people that have joined your Facebook group. What's Dr. Hey. Ron's Twitter ID? He said it too fast.
Oh, sorry about that. RK, R for Romeo, K for Kilo. 5075.
There you go.
And Andrew is, can I say yours?
Yeah, if you want. TTR.
TTR 2008.
I found my login less than 5 minutes ago. I'm logged in. How about that? I can see you there.
We could just send Twitter messages to each other and just dispense with the whole radio studio thing.
Light emitting particles to support new form of computing.
Completely ignored that comment.
I've just seen a chumby. It looks a bit like the sort of the sort of bag you keep your toothbrush and your shaving razor in and with a screen on the front. Yeah,
is that good?
I've no idea.
All right, light emitting particles to support new form of computing. U.S. physicists actually are using particles called excitons to develop transistors that could be far better suited to fast communications by eliminating the need to convert signals from electrons to photons. The new exciton-based transistors are expected to break traditional speed barriers between computing and communication signals.
Ooh.
How's your transistor theory going, Dr. Ron?
Good. NP, NP, NP.
That's it? That's it? And biases and stuff like that to make them conduct.
Yeah.
Basically a little switch. Well, how many trillion of them do they get into a microprocessor these days?
It's mind-boggling. You can't imagine it, can you?
No. Exactly. When I first got involved in electronics many, many, many years ago, transistors were the in thing. There was not much. You could get a TTL gate or something like that, which were, very infant sort of switching, which were in little IC packets.
Mm.
And now look at it.
You remember looking at schematic diagrams of ICs or integrated circuits like chips, and it'd just have that leg and that leg of the chip is the the base and the emitter of the transistor here, and this chip's got 3 transistors in it or 8 transistors in it. And we go, wow, that's unreal. Yeah. 8 transistors in a chip.
Can
and now we've got how many bajillions do you get in a processor?
Well, imagine if you tried to draw out the full circuit of something like a Pentium Core 2 Duo or something.
But someone must have.
You'd be able to see it from the moon.
But the diagram must exist, though. People must do this, and engineers must design these things.
I bet they don't either.
I bet you they don't print it.
I bet a computer designs
You reckon?
Rather than an engineer.
That's
and I reckon that even that computer was designed by a computer. That the last engineer that did anything was two or three generations back in the chain.
That's a bit scary.
Bring on artificial intelligence, I reckon. Steven Spielberg was right, wasn't he?
It's very scary that computers are designing bigger
Intel
and better computers.
Phone home. What?
Intel phone home, did you say?
Yes.
Yes, moving on. Andrew, pull us out of this dive.
Yes, well, we were talking about transistors. Carbon, they're all based on carbon, that black stuff, really bad for you, you know? And now they've moved
on.
They
were silicon.
Well, yeah, sort of. Sorry, yeah, you're right. The first ones were silicon, then they moved to carbon.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, where was I?
I don't know.
And now we're moving to light-emitting particles, which is amazing. Apparently, a research team in the University of California in San Diego have built and demonstrated the first computing devices to use excitons, spelled E-X-C-I-T-O-N-S.
Excitons.
Related
I've
to
never
crotons.
Heard of an exciton. Yes. Yes, you sprinkle them in your soup.
That's right. Put a few excitons on daily cornflakes and off you go. It's a bit like a Barocca.
Yeah, you're thinking of the Savoy biscuits.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. Macintosh, because JD's not here, we should talk about Macs.
Macintosh. We should.
Mac clone server, half the price with Leopard on it.
A Mac clone?
Yes. Florida-based Mac cloner.
It'll never sell. Who would buy one?
Is this the same clone company that we were talking about making Mac workstations the other week?
That's the one.
Okay.
What do they call themselves? SciStar. PiStar, however you pronounce it. Is treading on Apple's toes again, offering Mac OS X servers as an option on its new range of rack-mounted servers. The company caused a stir earlier this year when it launched systems built from generic PC components, but with the Apple's Leopard pre-installed. The cat was installed on it already. Now they're doing it with servers. PC components, oh, that's just sacrilege, isn't it?
But the whole point of a Macintosh is that you get the hardware and the software are so tightly integrated that you don't have all the problems that you have with clone PC
machines.
That's
right, and it's made by Apple. It's got Apple splashed all over it.
Yeah.
Well, their server range starts at US $15.99 compared with the base price of $2,999 for the Apple server. Half the price. And since they launched its budget-priced open computer range with an offer to pre-install a Mac OS X 10.5, market watchers have speculated about why Apple has not attempted to shut it down. Very good question, because Mac watches its brand and its patents and its copyrights very quickly.
Yeah, now when they
I guess all they're doing is selling an operating system. Is there any problem with that?
Yeah, well, when they were talking about the workstation one, there was talk of modifying the license agreement so you couldn't so it wasn't legal to install it on anything other than Apple hardware.
Okay.
So,
I can't see who would buy such a system because Apple fanatics wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole.
No.
And people who aren't Apple fanatics would go,
go for
a PC. So maybe Apple aren't concerned for a good reason. They don't think there's any need to be.
Maybe it's such a small area. Hmm. Curious.
Well, when you think about it, Leopard's a great operating system. By the way, we still
have it. Part of the reason it's a great operating system is because it's so well adapted to the hardware it's running on.
Mm. Yeah, but if you buy it, you've bought it, haven't you? You can install it on any hardware, even if you make something yourself, can't you?
No, you haven't bought it any more than you've bought any other piece of software. What you've bought is a license to use it, and there's conditions on that license.
Oh, I see. You're getting technical on me now.
I am.
So what are the conditions? Does it
Tech
specify...
Talk Radio. Did you read the thing at the start of the show?
No, I didn't.
It was technical.
All right, let's get technical. But have you read the conditions? Can you install it on anything other than a Mac? Branded piece of hardware?
As I say, when the previous furor was on about the workstations they were doing, they were talking about putting it. So we'll have to look it up and see if they have changed the conditions.
Ah, oh, dear.
So, the software you buy is a license, so it's possible they could put conditions on it, is my point I was making.
Very good. All right, we're going to talk about Safari after this.
Compelling.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Judicious.
The question is really whether young people particularly are addicted to being connected to other people all the time.
Historical.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history. This is the day, the 6th of October, 2006, that life in Australia will be changed forever.
Caring.
I know as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school, how can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
You heard of road rage?
What about web rage?
They should be wearing a mask and carrying a gun.
Relations between Telstra and the federal government have been extremely strained almost from the moment Sol Trujillo became chief executive.
Optus had, again, had quite a good quarter, but its 3G service is very low profile at the moment.
And the Queen's got an iPod.
Betty's got one.
Yeah.
I wonder what she listens to. She'll probably listen to us.
An unexpectedly high number of voters swamped the system. Well, what did they expect?
Controversial.
Less attention is paid to the equally interesting question, should journalists blog?
Magical.
And I've got some residual powers.
Ambitious.
High-speed broadband, it's available in most of Asia as well as being in the rest of the world. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
Religion.
Talking of the Roman Catholics, I have been on Vatican Radio.
Comedy.
You put the date on ePray, it goes, and you get a whole service. Just on.
How does it go?
It goes.
Insightful, entertaining, and informative. Tech Talk Radio. More than just technology.
It's a strictly rehearsed and finely polished program.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Everyone listening on the long version, the short version, people probably aren't hearing this by now, but anyway, hey, it's their loss. Alrighty, as I mentioned earlier on in the program, Apple is their web browser. Safari is by far, in my opinion, one of the best browsers around. It renders graphics very, very nicely.
And you don't have to have a Mac to run it. It'll run on a PC.
Yeah, it's foistware, as Graham would say. It's foisted upon
it
you.
It might even be on your PC if you didn't even install it.
Yeah, just go and check it. You'll probably find in the start box down there somewhere, there'll be a version of...
if you've loaded iTunes in the last 12 months.
Yeah, because it's pre-checked to install. I don't know how they get away with it, but nonetheless they do. Apple has issued an update for the Windows version of its Safari web browser. In addition to minor stability fixes, the update addresses four security vulnerabilities in the browser that range in severity from information disclosure to the ability to remotely execute malicious code. Now, this has always been one of the things that Apple have been criticized for, not having any of this sort of protection stuff on there, like pop-up blockers and things like that.
Mm.
Never before they probably had the need for it, but nonetheless, I guess they probably would be now. I wonder if you can run plugins on. I've never really looked. Can you run a plugin
on Safari?
I'm sure you could.
I've never used Safari. We need JD here.
Someone will tell us. Yeah, we're Twittering, we're emailing. Just send us one. Anyway, the company is advising all Windows users to install the update, which can be attained through Apple's Foistware software update service or by visiting the company's download site. The
update is that what it says?
No. Oh. The company does not affect Mac users. Yes. The most notable of the four security fixes is the so-called carpet bomb. Have you heard of a carpet bomb? It's a condition disclosed by Microsoft earlier this month. The flaw could potentially allow malware within the website itself, designated by Internet Explorer as a trusted site, to run on it without the user's input.
Sounds like something the US Army would use in
carpet bomb, yeah.
Iraq
they used to do those things in some strange countries when they declared war on them. Hmm. Yes. Anyway, I just thought I'd share that with you.
Interesting.
Now, on the other side of the coin, Microsoft. What's happening with IE8? Who knows?
Who cares?
Who knows? Oh, really? You Next. Like that, is it?
Yep.
Okay,
good. Install Firefox.
Firefox. Yeah, spreadfirefox.com.
Well, I must admit, as a web developer, I find the frustrations with Internet Explorer very frustrating. It does some very strange things. No wonder you need a style sheet all by yourself, because Microsoft does, the IE does have a mind of its own, I think.
Yeah, well, there was some talk that IE8 was going to address some of those issues and make
Explorer
much more standards compliant. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That'd be a novelty, wouldn't it?
Well.
But anyway, developers are shunning Microsoft Vista. Who would have thought?
Uh-huh.
Analyst house Evans Data has released statistics showing that less than 1 in 10 developers are writing applications for Microsoft's work-in-progress operating system, Vista. I added that bit too, because that's what Bulma said. It was a work in progress.
Microsoft are shunning Vista.
Yes, yeah. Windows 7. Bring it on.
Yeah, that's
only
it.
12 months ago.
Don't look at Vista. Look over here at the new Windows 7.
The Evans Data Spring 2008, the North American Development Survey found that 8% of developers are working on Vista applications, compared to nearly 50% on XP, which Microsoft will be ceasing selling on June the 30th. Did you know that?
They're going to stop selling it.
Apparently.
Next week.
Apparently.
Wow.
I don't know how that's going to affect people, because I think there's a lot of people out there that love their XP.
It's going to make a lot of people angry, isn't it?
It's turning into like the Windows 98 of the operating system.
The Windows ME
of 21st century operating systems, isn't
that's
it?
That's right. Yep.
It's like,
it's just going to be...
I think that's a good way of categorizing it, actually. It will be that, won't
it? Yeah. It'll be a footnote. It'll be the operating system that no one used.
Hmm. Yeah, 98 was a little bit like that, but ME especially...
No, 98 SE was usable. I mean, you've got particular issues with Windows 98, but a lot of people use Windows 98. It's a lot better than Windows 95.
Are you serious? You reckon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you've got a Windows now, boys.
If you've got a Windows 98 machine, didn't you just completely reinstall Windows 95 from scratch, OS R 2 when that was available?
No.
You used to run with 98.
Yeah.
Did you?
98 SE, 98 second edition. Yeah. The USB support even half worked.
Yeah, it almost worked, didn't it?
Yeah. It worked most of the time, some of the time, for some things. Yeah.
I used to like how I had to make a special effort to go and install IP as a protocol
in
Windows 95.
I remember that.
Microsoft did that. Yeah, in Windows 98 you didn't.
Yeah, that's right. That's true. Yeah. And Microsoft thought, there's that IP protocol. That won't take off.
Windows ME was the operating system no one ever used.
Yeah, ME was the black sheep.
Yep, three people installed that in Australia, I'm sure.
Mm. Yeah, it's going to be the Vista.
Yep.
Not these three, some other three.
That's right.
Mm.
It's interesting, isn't it? It's funny you mentioned that before, the IP. I remember in doing that too in Windows 95. You had to turn that protocol on if you wanted to.
Oh, no, I remember in Windows 3.1 where
you used NetBUI or something, didn't
you? No, you couldn't. Well, not for internet. You used NetBUI for your local area networking. But if you wanted to do IP, if you wanted to do internet work, you had to install a third-party stack.
You did. Yes, you did. Remember Trumpet Winsock?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Old 16-bit IP stack program.
Oh, this
Get onto it.
I'm going to listen back to this show on AM radio. This is romantic. Trumpet Winsock, I remember that.
Yeah, and it's cue up some violins in the background, some piano bar music.
Yeah, that's right.
Because the operating system wasn't shipped with IP.
Mm.
They had...
What a backward concept that was.
Well, it was back in the days when we had networks and... We had other things that
right.
We didn't
IPS,
have.
IPS, XPX?
Yeah, exactly. We didn't have.
Yeah, I remember that too.
Yeah. We didn't have network. We didn't have networks at home, and there wasn't an internet that everyone connected to.
No. No one ever thought of. Back then, they thought a cloud was where rain came from.
Yeah.
Mm. Now everyone's got one. Google, Microsoft, Apple, everyone. Why wouldn't you? Zoho. How's your Zoho going?
Zoho's good. Zoho's working
now. Yeah, you finally got to connect into the... There's a few bugs potentially there.
Potentially, yeah.
Zoho, for those of you who don't know, is a collaborative online system where you can share Word documents and spreadsheets and databases.
Not only
databases
share, but edit and... Yeah, you use the website the way you would use Word or Excel.
It's just encouraging your colleagues to use it, which is the problem, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah, but once they do that, it's good.
We had this as a website of the week a few weeks ago. We've been using it here a great deal to help with the Tech Talk radio production. It's been working extremely well.
It has been good for being able to collaboratively work on documents, yeah.
Speaking of collaboratively working on things, this passed my email box recently and I just had to chuckle about it. I'm surprised you haven't grabbed it for the odd spot of the week, Dr. Ron.
Oh, I might have yet. Hang on. Off you go.
The teenagers are using Google Earth to host illegal pool parties. Did you hear about this?
No illegal pool parties in this week's hot spot. No.
Tech-savvy teenagers are using Google Earth to pinpoint private swimming pools for illegal summer parties. Once a suitable venue has been chosen, partygoers conduct the final arrangements over a social networking site, such as Facebook or Bebo. And then the next thing you know, 16 revelers are thought to have gate-crashed two pools near Bournemouth in an overnight party last week, prompting police fears that copycat incidents over the summer month are just going to be prolific.
And now we've told everybody how to do it in Australia.
According to police... Pool owners.
Tech Talk radio users will be jumping in other people's pools in the droves.
Absolutely. Yeah, fortunately, we're in the middle of winter here, so you're pretty safe for a while.
You want to jump in someone else's swimming pool at the moment in Australia, then good luck to you. It's about 8 degrees today.
But according to police, pool-owning residents have returned from work to find their swimming pool full of beer cans.
I hate it when that happens.
Mm.
Don't you? So there you go. I think the youth of today, very, very industrious with what they can come up with, aren't they? I think it's fantastic. Bring it on. More of this, I think we should have.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
So when you roam on your mobile phone, do you reckon it's pricey, these roaming charges, these interconnect fees that the telcos love throwing at you for exorbitant...
Like when you go overseas?
Yeah.
To Tasmania?
You have a problem with Tasmania tonight. We apologise
to our
Tasmanian listeners. They're probably not listening to us anyway.
It's the furthest I've been overseas.
Thank you for alienating 800,000 people.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I love Tasmania.
We're on in Tassie. We're on in Huon.
Whereabouts in Tasmania is Huon?
near where there's a river there. It's called the Huon River.
Oh, okay. The big wet thing in the middle. Yeah,
that's
okay.
It.
It's where Huon pine comes from.
It is. Like a big apples down there too. I love their apples.
Go very Tassie. Cool.
Anyway.
Roaming. Roam if you want to.
I didn't get charged a lot for going to Tasmania. They just charged me the same as if I was home.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
It's the same country, Graham.
Oh. This is the point.
Pleased. This is the point.
I'll draw you a map. You've got a map on your desktop.
Yeah, it's right here. It's hidden by Adobe Reader 7.
It is.
The federal government has ordered an investigation to ascertain whether Australian consumers are paying too much when they use their mobile phones when overseas. Communications Minister Mr. Conroy has ordered, because he hasn't done much lately,
no.
Really, has he? Has ordered the House of Representatives Standing Committee on Communications to look into whether retail tariffs for international mobile roaming charges continue to reflect costs borne by carriers. That's a very valid point, really, isn't it?
Hmm.
Because in this day of communications, as you and I were saying before, Doctor, on off air, you can ring and talk to the United States for the same price that you can actually ring and speak to someone locally. Now, why should you charge?
In some cases, probably even cheaper.
Absolutely. Why should you be charged excessive fees when you're overseas?
To ring back the other way, yeah.
Exactly. Like if you were in the United States, Dr. Ron, I'd probably be charged 10 times what I'd be charged to ring someone in the States.
Mm.
Why?
Mm. This is the question. This is what Mr. Conroy wants the answer to.
Mm.
It is. But I think it's one of those little fees. It's like a bank fee, isn't it?
I'll be tripping around Europe in a couple of months and I'm going to take my mobile phone with me. I hope that I'm not going to have to pay through the nose to use it.
Hmm.
I've got international roaming turned on my service.
Have you got an unlocked phone, an unlocked handset? Because what I'd suggest is buy a SIM in another country, prepaid, and we can ring you on that.
Well, that would make a lot of sense, wouldn't it?
It would, because then that way you're not roaming.
A lot of people do that, but then you lose your number and people ring your old number and you have to distribute your UK number to everybody else.
If I was on holidays, I wouldn't want people ringing me while I'm on holidays.
Well, that might be a valid point too. But you might have people that you want to keep in touch with, but, I don't know. It's whether you want that convenience or not.
Yeah. You only want to talk to TikTok radio while you're overseas.
I mean, once upon a time, the only people who would carry their mobile phone into another country and try and use it would be people who can afford to pay whatever the carriers wanted to ask.
Or people who didn't pay and their company picked up the tab.
Well, exactly right. Yeah.
People. You know, one thing that we take for granted in this country, in Australia,
mm-hmm.
that the poor old people in the United States don't, is that we have incoming calls to our mobiles free of charge.
This is true.
In the United States,
if I ring, they get charged for incoming calls.
If I ring Lid in the States, or anyone for that matter, she said, can you ring me at home? Ring me on my landline, because then they don't pay this incoming
call
fee.
That amazed me when I found this out recently. Yeah, and I suppose that's the opposite side to the Texan broadband unlimited thing.
It's the only thing we've got going for us, you can take incoming calls for nothing.
Yeah. Can you imagine the outcry in this country if one of the startup, little telephone companies decided to run an American model and charge people here for incoming calls. Can you imagine the outcry?
It's a bit like being charged for uploads in your broadband, isn't it?
Yeah, well...
There's only a couple of companies that do that, isn't there?
Yeah. Well, they're increasing a bit, but yes. There's
only because they're resold products, aren't they?
Is that the reason why? Is
it? Well, I can only imagine that the poor old telcos meeting the cap. I think we were talking about this last week, weren't we? They buy their bandwidth in bulk, and if people are starting to push things up... I do a lot of uploading. I don't know about you guys, but I do a lot of publishing to web services and stuff like that. So, in fact, I can start my DSL at the new month with maybe 4 or 5 gig uploaded and nothing downloaded.
That's the opposite of what most people do, yeah.
Yeah, the exact opposite. But anyway, that's
someone's
got to
bank all the content.
Anyway, there's a good option there. Let's put a bit of a probe in there and see if roaming charges, because I think it's... old hat. It's a bit like bank fees. Like, why do we need a check that takes 3 days to clear when electronically it happens instantly? Bank-to-bank transfers happens instantly. What is this gap that we are trying to overcome here?
I've got a PayPal gripe.
Have you?
The fact that they sit on money for 7 days when you do a transfer, that can't take 7 days.
Do they really?
Yeah. Here, if you want to have your PayPal account topped up from a bank account, it takes at least a week. 10 days.
Really?
For the money to come through. And the status says processing. And it's not just my bank, it's other people's banks as well. I've asked around. It takes a long time. And I can't understand what it's a simple electronic transfer. Where is the delay?
It's earning somebody interest for those 7 days.
Well,
isn't
this is it. This is what's happening. They're saying, well, we've got that money secured now.
That's part of their business model.
Exactly. Yeah. And part of our terms and conditions is that when you do a transfer, we're telling people it's going to take 7 days or 10 days. We'll stick that on the short-term money market and we'll make a bit of money for us and then we'll give it to our customer. It's a bit wrong. It's a bit wrong. I don't like PayPal for that's one of the reasons why I don't
you're
like
really
PayPal.
That cynical. Do you reckon they do that? Or you reckon it's
of course
a
they do. They do that.
Of course they do. How can it take so long? How can it be 10 days? If I've got a bank locally here and I wanted to do an electronic transfer into my PayPal account, 10 days?
But
what
the,
are they doing?
The flip side of that is that if they're getting some revenue from those sorts of activities, you know, they're holding onto the money for 7 days, maybe earning a few cents interest on it, but that's probably helping to keep the fees that they're actually charging you low.
Maybe. Maybe, Graham.
Maybe.
Hmm.
You'd hope so.
By the way, I don't have anything in front of me, but eBay and PayPal went past the date of no return for the ACCC.
Yes, it did.
And what happened? Anyone know?
They've put some new terms and conditions up on their website, I've noticed.
Yeah, lots of eBay warnings when you log on at the moment. It tells you all the changes that we propose to do have been postponed, but they will still occur.
Mm-hmm. And they were requiring you to still have a PayPal account, even if you weren't being forced to use it. That was one of the things that they did.
PayPal, and they'll accept COD as a payment method.
Cash on delivery still good, huh?
Yeah, and I think off the top of my head, I don't have it in front of me either, Andrew, but I think they'll also accept Visa and I think it was MasterCard, but other payment forms they're not going to sanction.
Mm.
Particularly direct credits into people's bank accounts.
Which, of course, is dangerous anyway because, there's no way to get your money back if the goods don't show up.
True.
Is that why they hold for 10 days, maybe? It's a bit of insurance policy to make sure that you get your goods.
No, the actual payment through PayPal is not held for 10 days. If you're wanting to top up your account from a bank account.
Okay, I've never tried that. That might be why.
So if you open a PayPal account and you verify yourself and you establish that you are who you say you are, then I think, well, I'm going to put $200 in my PayPal account so I can start to buy things on eBay, it's going to take 7 days or 10 days.
But it doesn't take that if you do it from, say, if you top up your PayPal from your Visa card. It happens instantly, does it?
I think it does. I haven't done it from a credit card, but I think it does happen faster.
I think I've only done it from a credit card.
Let us know if you're a power PayPal user. Feedback@techtalkradio.com.au.
Speaking of that, Andrew's been emailing us in relation to Apple software.
Hi, he Andrew.
Says, regards to the Mac clones, I believe by putting OS X on a non-Apple is a violation of the EULA, the End User Licensing Agreement.
Yep.
The EULA states that you cannot use any Apple software on a non-Apple computer, but I have the feeling that Apple is going to make sure their case is watertight before they go legal, because if they lose, then the floodgates will be open.
Mm.
So remember that Macs are now Intel-based, which is why clones are possible.
Yes.
So there's probably some logic in that, because if you were to go after people, you'd want to win. Well, Mac would. They've got very deep pockets, I would have thought.
Yes.
Anyway, thank you for Andrew for sending that in.
Some more feedback as well. TARDIS3 on the Twitter device says he's hating Windows ME with a passion.
TARDIS, right. You should not be using Windows ME still.
Yeah, no. is he hating it or did he
or
hate?
Or did he, past tense?
Hated Windows ME, maybe.
Maybe.
I hope you're not still using Windows. I'm sure he isn't. Sure he's not.
Okay. Now, something else. We're all IT gurus here, and we've all probably been in charge of some form of networking, even if it's at home, the home network.
We all know enough to be dangerous.
1 in 3 IT staff are snooping on coworkers.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Absolutely.
I've only found 1 in 3.
Yeah, absolutely. This is why IT people can hold organisations to ransom, because they know what goes on in these places. 1 in 3 informed technological professionals abuse the administrative passwords to access confidential data such as colleagues' salary details, personal emails, or boardroom meeting minutes, according to a new survey. US information security company CyberArk surveyed 300 senior IT professionals and found that 1/3 admitted to secretly snooping, while 47% said they had accessed information that was not relevant to their role. Curiosity killed the cat, really, didn't it?
Yes, that's a bit disturbing that that's going on quite that much. And I do a lot of network administration as part of my work, and certainly in the course of trying to diagnose faults or solve problems or work out what's going on with certain things, you do incidentally encounter users' data sometimes. You might see subject lines of emails, or you might see the contents of their home directory or things like that. But as an administrator, you make the effort to see it but not see it. Do you know what I mean? To see the technical side of it but not see the content.
I know what you're trying to say, because you do have to fault find things. I guess it's like a bit of a privilege, really, isn't it?
It is, and you have to be respectful of people's privacy, even if you do have to, you know, Occasionally, you see the directory listing of their home.
There's nothing
directory.
Illegal about it, though, because it's a work domain and work processes. So it's theoretically anyone within the organisation.
Yeah, I'm not talking about the legal side of it, though. I'm talking about ethically what you should do as an administrator, and you know, you shouldn't, you know, if you see the contents of a personal email because you're trying to track down a fault, you're probably you're going to intentionally not notice the contents and only look at the headers. Do you know what I mean?
I worked for many years as a telecommunications technician.
Yep.
Exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
Check this line's working. Yep, this line's working. There's someone talking on that
you'd
line.
You'd drop your
yep.
test equipment across the line. You'd notice that there was a conversation there, but you wouldn't listen to it.
You wouldn't listen to it. You're testing the line or you're listening to it for some technical reason.
Yeah.
Not because you're wanting to actually eavesdrop on a conversation. But that would happen every day. Every hour of every day that you're working, you'd be doing that sort of stuff.
Yeah. It's the same thing.
If you just sat there and listened to the phone calls all day,
people,
you wouldn't get any work done.
People who are in those highly responsible positions of having access to that data or those phone lines or whatever it might happen to be are going to be people of a calibre that are not going to be snooping. It's an important consideration for people who are hiring IT staff or IT...
Do you reckon there's a new level of trust that's going to be required?
Yes.
And especially if you're in sensitive areas. Like, it's all right being in a, you know, general business environment, whether you be a retailer or a wholesaler or something like that. But if you're working in more of a, more a sensitive environment. So
such as in government or in a bank or a financial institution.
Law enforcement or something like that.
Law enforcement in particular, yep.
You've certainly got, I think, the ethical side of, you know, what you see go
and
past.
And I think
from
those organisations are aware of the need to have trustworthy people in those positions.
But wouldn't those sort of organisations have checks in place to make sure that sort of information didn't go the wrong way? Like, you know, and even still, there'd certainly be rules about what you can and can't email, what you can and can't print,
yep.
What you can and can't take home,
yep.
What you can and can't leave on the bus in the middle of the tube in London, all that sort of stuff. Surely there would be those sort of checksums in place.
Yeah, well, having the right people and people with a degree of ethical standards would be a part of that overall security strategy for an organisation like that. But it should be for every organisation.
But accidents happen too. You know, like certain lists and things like that get out.
Yeah. And no system can be 100% secure. But I'm talking. But this is about IT staff intentionally snooping, intentionally going looking for things that their privileged position gives them access to that they otherwise wouldn't have. And it's not on.
Victoria has an Information Privacy Act now. So there's legislation which governs how information is handled.
Really? Mm. Does that apply to IT professionals or does that apply to government bodies?
Applies to everybody.
Really?
Mm.
So if you do happen to have the administrator password and you use it to look at somebody's private emails or private home directory contents.
If you've got it legitimately and you're using it legitimately, then there's no issue. But
if you're using it to gain access to something that you shouldn't see,
then you might be committing criminal offences, not
potentially.
Just, potentially, not just breaching a policy of a company. Mm.
And then we enter into a whole new minefield, don't we? Oh my goodness, that'd be terrible. All right, Hotspot Gadget and Website of the Week coming up after this.
You're listening.
Dr. Ron?
Here I am listening.
Residual powers. And I've got some residual powers.
You can't turn off CDMA.
In terms of the volume,
I understand to give fingerprints. Now, this
we may have digressed.
Talk radio.
Phil Burgess also claimed the country would remain behind.
We used to think 600 kilometres.
Don't open
per
things that are good that you're not expecting, even if they do appear.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Blu-ray, baby. It's the way to go.
Absolutely.
LG's BE06 External Blu-ray Burner.
Is this your gadget?
It is.
External
we're doing
burner.
Yeah, I've got the right bit, haven't I?
Yeah.
Don't worry me like that. Now that the format war is over, LG has decided to release an external Blu-ray writer that also supports playback of HD DVD, would you believe?
Oh, okay, good.
Yes, this review is from Gadget Zone. LG's BE06 is encased in solid white and black enclosure and comes with a vertical stand. It's got a nice blue flashing light. USB...
Good for some.
Yeah. USB port is located at the rear of the unit for connectivity, along with the DC port for power. The eject button is touch sensitive so that wear and tear on the button is reduced. The system requirements for the BE06 are quite high. LG recommends an Intel Core 2 Duo processor, E6300 or above. And at least a fancy NVIDIA graphics card. They've included a utility to check for compatibility if you're unsure if your system is up to the challenge.
What's it worth these days? I haven't even bought one yet.
The RRP is $549.
Oh, pricey. Mm. I wouldn't buy one if you didn't have to.
Especially the price of the discs too. The blanks are still quite dear, I think.
Are they?
I think so.
Well, no, I must admit, a lot of people, I've even professionally haven't been asked for Blu-ray at this point in my life, so...
It'll happen.
Oh, I'm sure it will, but at that sort of pricing, I don't think it's relevant.
Still a bit costly, $549.
Even HD stuff would down-convert to standard DVD, because it plays in everything.
And get it onto a DVD.
Yeah.
Look, to read a complete review of the new drive, check out Damien's blog at gadgetzone.com.au. For more information on this drive, go to lge.com.au.
Here it is, everybody, the world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio Website of the Week.
This week's website was suggested by regular forum contributor and friend of the program, TARDIS3. The website is addictomatic.com.
Should I ask?
A-D-D-I-C-T, addictomatic.com. It's a search engine.
I think Graham's typing it ferociously into his laptop over there.
But instead of displaying the results from the entire web like Google does, Addictomatic returns results from RSS feeds, news sites, blogs, and social media sites. So I searched for Tech Talk Radio, and it returned a heap of results from sites like Dig, Delicious Tags, Google Blog Search, and Live.com News.
Okay.
It even found our video of last week's competition draw on YouTube, because we've got it tagged, Tech Talk Radio. So
it
searches all of the current news sites and blogs and social media systems and such things. So that's our website of the week, addictomatic.com.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Shoot. Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
She is big busted, petite, very friendly, and she runs on batteries. A Japanese firm has produced a 38-centimetre tall robotic girlfriend that kisses on command to go on sale in September for around $175, with a target market of lonely adult men. The Age reports, using her infrared sensors and battery power, the diminutive damsel named Emma puckers up for nearby human heads, entering what designers call its love mode. Strong, tough, and battle-ready are some of the words often associated with robots, but we wanted to break that stereotype and provide a robot that's sweet and interactive, said Monaco Sakanui, a spokeswoman for the maker Sega Toys. She's very lovable, the robot, not Monaco Sakanui, and though she's not a human, she can act like a real girlfriend. Emma, which stands for Eternal Maiden Actualization, can also hand out business cards, sing and dance, with Sega hoping to sell 10,000 in the first year. Japan, home to almost half the world's 800,000 industrial robots, envisages a $10 billion market for artificial intelligence in a decade.
There's a million and one lines there, Dr. Ron, but we had to sit silent and do absolutely nothing. Thank you very much for such a...
I had to keep a straight face through the whole thing.
We all sat there, faders down. you have been listening to Tech Talk Radio, Dr. Ron, Graham Callaghan, myself, Andrew McComb. Next week, we'll do it all again on the same radio station that you're listening to right now, or on the pod, wherever you might be listening, or on the stream.
We'll be hearing, listening to an interview with Eastern Health next week, who have implemented Microsoft's new Office communication server.
Oh, how they're using it and all that sort of stuff.
How they're using it, how it's going.
Very good.
Look forward to that. Real live success story.
Fantastic. Till then, same time, same place. See you soon.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panelists Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations that take the show, including 3WBC and 3XX in Melbourne, Cairns FM, Switch 1197 in Brisbane, 95.3 Huon FM in Tasmania, Queer FM in WA, and Stop and Go Radio in the United States. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.